kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181. You can find a list of upcoming guests on our Facebook page or on our website, kmxt.org. Audio from each day's program will be posted on the website.
It is a dirty lowdown. Good morning. Thank you for tuning us in again this morning as we collectively try and navigate this pandemic together sanely as a community. Today is a follow-up to a couple of conversations we had last week, which you can listen to again on demand on our website if you missed them the first time. The medical community have all been working tirelessly on this for months, and they've graciously agreed to come in and give us weekly updates on what's going on and give you best practice updates. We'd really like this to be a listener-driven program. These medical professionals are here for you to answer questions, your questions. So please send in your questions. Keep them on topic and keep them positive, please. We're not here to bash anyone. We're trying to give you the best information you can have to conduct your lives safely in this time. So call 486-3181 or email your questions to lowdown@kmxt.org. In the studio again, we have Dr. Smith from Kodiak for Providence, Kodiak Island Hospital. Gina Bishop, the CEO of Providence. Carly Franz, the whatever you do over there, the PR person?
That's right.
Is that your official title, the PR person?
Senior communications special.
Senior communications special. And Evan Jones from CANA.
That's right.
You know, thank you guys for making time in your day to actually come in and talk to us about this. You were all here before. You gave some really sane, good advice to people about what to do, best practices, how to keep this away. As far as we know right now, there's nothing here, right?
That's correct.
And people have been socially distancing, so maybe people have traveled in and kept to themselves and have eliminated it in themselves without spreading it to others. So that's the emphasis we have is people coming back from hot communities that have it. Need to socially isolate and it won't get into the community. So have we had it? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. It's tough to say. But if people do the right thing, we won't have it spread through the community.
So from your, do you get a chance to get out into the community, all of you, or are you just hunkered down in where you're working and go home?
I think all of us get to also do some normal life. So when we go home, like we tell all of our staff, is you still have to social distance, but you have to get outside, go for a hike. You still have to go to the grocery store, but you practice your social distancing. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, your mouth. So people still have to do all of that.
On top of that, I feel like one of the most important things is keeping a good mental health through this. Because if we are completely isolated indoors, it's not easy to do. Even the introverts get sick of being indoors after a while. But there is Kodiak, we're blessed to be here because we can spread out and do awesome things here in Kodiak that won't bring us in contact with other people.
Do you see the community as a whole complying with what's been directed?
I think this is Dr. Smith. I think for the most part, people are doing a good job. My concern is keep doing what you're doing and don't get lax because we haven't seen any cases yet. And, you know, it's the second week of being told you have to stay indoors, stay away from people, and don't get lax in that. We still have to practice good social distancing. That's what's going to keep things down. And our goal is, I think we're going to see the coronavirus, but we want to keep, if we can flatten that curve so it trickles in rather than just tidal waves us, that's one of our goals. But I think people are doing a pretty good job.
Where are we at in terms of where that peak would be for us? Do we have any idea on modeling from the state of, we've already got cases on the mainland, and we got cases in Southeast, and we have cases as far up as Barrow. So if it came here, how long would it take for it to become a peak thing? You know, because we look at these multiples come in. We you're looking at me. You're not the math guy. Is that what your look was?
It is completely dependent on. It's completely dependent on how good people do with social isolating. I feel like if we do a poor job, we will peak quickly. We will peak in a couple of weeks because this doubles very quickly. Right now, the infection rate with this, with the flu, the infection rate is like 1.3, 1.4. With this one, it's meaning that for everybody who gets the flu, they on average, they give it to 1.3 people. With this one, it's closer to 2.4, and so it is much more infective. And so that's why we're really emphasizing this social distancing, just to spread it out a little bit so that it disseminates through the community a little slower so we're able to handle it better.
Okay. Gina, I want to get this out because it's one of those things that come out in the community. We had some comments from people after last week's show. There are questions about travel, and I think people are well aware that you traveled and you came in last week with a mask on. But the question is, what people that travel outside and are supposed to quarantine themselves, are they not supposed to stay inside?
So we're following the 14-day mandate for a mask. So anyone who comes back and is a hospital employee and have not been through a level 3 area, they can come back to work if they're symptom free with a mask. And so they're practicing their proper hand washing and all of those types of things go through employee health. I've been back over 14 days. I'm still wearing a mask because I have one. And we're just practicing social distancing with our meetings. We're using Skype and Microsoft Teams and those types of platforms at work. The folks we can allow to work at home, we allow to work at home. There's very few of those because most of our staff do care for patients. And then the level 3 folks who come through level 3, they're at home on isolation for 14 days.
I got you. And you work with medical professionals, and I assume that they're sort of monitoring you, right? I mean,
everyone
is. So you can see on my ID badge, you're on the radio, you can't see it, but I have a green sticker.
Twice. You were good today?
I'm good. I didn't have a fever. I don't have symptoms. When you walk, we only have 2 entrances right now at the hospital. Anybody who comes through gets their temperature checked. They're asked if they're symptom free, and then they get to show that they met today's screening. They get a sticker that we do that 12 hours. So I worked a 24-hour shift. So yesterday evening they rescreened me, and again this morning. So we're monitoring anybody who comes into that hospital.
And then we also trend and track. So we're supposed to do a daily attestation online, and it tracks our temperature. It provides our central caregiver health department with just trending information. So if one day I have like a 97.6 degree temperature, the next day I have a 99, it'll set up some kind of an alert, and they're going to contact me.
Absolutely.
What's happening at Canna?
So at Canna, we were kind of changing things up a little bit, and we are reserving one of our clinics for respiratory patients only. And that doesn't mean they have COVID-19. We're just reserving it for respiratory patients only. It has negative pressure rooms. We are assigning one of our physicians to only see respiratory patients, and everybody else sees the other doctors. We'll have one person on call 7 days in a row, 24 hours a day, whose sole job is to round on patients in the hospital with respiratory symptoms, and whose sole job is to see patients in clinic with respiratory symptoms. And our idea is to try to prevent any spread from a physician spreading it. And is it an overreaction to it? It's tough to say. We're being as careful as we can be. So there will be 2 physicians rounding at the hospital, one for respiratory and one for non-respiratory patients from Canada.
Talk to me a little bit about the two new things. The drive-in testing site, is that, are we starting to test a lot of people?
So we still don't have a lot of testing kits, and so we're being very selective about who we test. I hope there comes a day where everybody who's traveled or has any symptoms at all can just drive up and get a test. But there's other areas that need the tests a lot because they have a lot in the community. We don't have a lot, so we're kind of low on the totem pole for getting these tests. I mean, it's simple things like nasopharyngeal swabs that we put back in your nose, and the viral transport tubes that are in high demand. We ordered them over a month ago and have never gotten any. And so it's not that we haven't tried. It's just that they are very difficult to get. They're producing them as fast as they can, but there's limited capacity. And even those take 3 days, 4 days to get back after we test them. So there's a new test coming out that might take 15 to 20 minutes that instead of checking for the virus itself, it checks for antibodies in the blood, which could be helpful because it'll be a faster turnaround.
Then we just know, though. Then if we know, we're still in the treatment, right?
Yeah, so most of the treatment is self-isolation still. That's the big thing. Unless you are in very bad shape, the treatment is self-isolation. And the important part about this that we've drawn from Korea studies is they tested everybody, whether you had symptoms or not. If you had any close contacts who had it, they tested tons of people. And so you look at the death rate in Korea, and it's pretty low. And part of it is they have a younger population. Than a lot of the places like Italy has a much older population, and they've had a pretty rough run of it. Korea has a much younger population, and they've done extensive testing so that they can do focused isolation of groups of people who test positive. The concerning thing that a lot of people have brought up is that there are people who have this virus and are shedding it and can give it to others who have virtually no symptoms at all. And so that mass testing could be helpful. We're not there yet, though. We'll be getting there, though. We're working hard towards getting there.
The new facility that the hospital is putting up, this temporary facility, you want to talk a little bit about that?
So let me, first off, people may have noticed that we put a tent up at the front entrance, and that's a basically to make sure that we had the tent, that we could use it, that we could heat it, and we're that will be ongoing as far as probably our screening tent. We're actually working on that today. So how are we going to screen patients in that, and then who do we send where?
So this is just to keep them out of the general building.
Yeah, so right now when they come in, they go through our sliding doors, and it's a bottleneck area. So this is the next step to try and expand that from a bottleneck to keep people a little bit further apart, and maybe we can screen patients and decide whether they need to be in the hospital or go, I think what you're referring is the alternative care site.
Right.
So the state came out last Friday with a recommendation. It's not currently a mandate that hospitals look at an alternate care site not in the hospital for those patients that can't do it, that have symptoms consistent with coronavirus, that can't self-isolate at home. Maybe they need a little bit of supplemental oxygen, maybe they need some fluids, but they aren't to the point where they need to be in a more intensive setting. And so we've with working with the Emergency Service Council and the school district are utilizing North Star Elementary as that site for patients who are positive or suspected positive that can't do it at home, with the routine care. So maybe their oxygen level is low. They just need some supplemental oxygen. They don't need to be on a ventilator. They don't need to be in the ICU. And that's projected to be a large percent of the population who are healthy. They can kind of get through it if we give them a little bit of help.
How many bed space is there?
So we're projecting for 200. So we have 56 cots set up right now, and we're trying to get that facility up and running by close of business Friday. And so we've had great community partnership getting that put together for linens and working on meals and all of those types of things. And one of the things that they found in the studies from looking at what happened in China and Italy is that the healthcare systems were overrun. And I think we've all heard Dr. Zink nightly on the radio talking about and on the television about the healthcare systems being overrun. And so that group of patients, if you have that many patients in the hospital, that's just not possible. I mean, we're a 25-bed critical access hospital. And so their proposal to us to say, what are we going to do with this group of mild patients that just need a little support? And a lot of those patients recover statistically. And so those patients would go back home. They would continue to self-isolate. And if their conditions became worse, then we would bring them into the hospital. But that's what the state's really partnering with the hospitals in order to protect our healthcare infrastructure, because we could be overrun quickly. And that's what we saw with Italy and with China, that they were overrun with those mild patients and then couldn't care for the sicker patients. So that's what we're trying to protect here.
So are you feeling that there's... Last week, we kind of knew where you were at in the preparations that was happening. Has anything materially changed in a week? You've already started to look at external buildings, at, you know, doing projections. Has your staff changed at all? Collectively, is the health community still working together to try and meet the demand that's going to come?
I think yes, we're all working together to try and look down the road for if we do have a surge of patients, how are we going to handle them? And this is that next step. So last week we were like, okay, we have ventilators. How are we going to manage those? What can we do with them? Where are we going to send people? Now we've like, okay, we have this intermediate or this mild group who needs a little bit of supportive care. Where are we going to put them? So I think we're further along the preparedness curve. And like Dr. Jones said, every day that we don't see a patient gives us one more day to be ready and look at all these other things that, like, what do we do for Betty? We've got that figured out. How do we, you know, how are we going to transport patients? If they get worse, they'll come. If they get worse at this alternate care site, then they'll come by ambulance to the hospital. So we're every day we get a chance to be more prepared.
That's so people in the community really can help you folks out. The more days you have, the better we're going to be in the long run.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's you know, I don't want to hog the thing. Let's jump into some of the questions we have from listeners. It was reported Ketchikan will be receiving more numerous test kits in the next week. By several weeks, they'll have rapid testing platforms to have results done locally within a few hours. What's the timeline for Kodiak getting more tests? I think we don't know.
Well, and so our healthcare system's been working on getting those rapid test machines to the different hospitals. And I guess fortunately, unfortunately, we're on the bottom of the list to get one of those machines because we don't have it in the community. So they're deploying those machines. And I think Dr. Zink talked on the television last night about deployment of those machines, and it's to the areas that need them first. And so what we really just plead the public to do is to self-isolate, good hand hygiene, and let's keep this out of the community if we can, because that's really what we need.
So we should also have the rapid test available. Probably next week we will be getting some. That's our hope. People make a lot of promises, and we hope they come through, but maybe even by next week we'll have the rapid test here in Kodiak.
Yeah. As the virus progresses, we hear more and more about asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic transmission. What measures is Providence and the local clinics taking to ensure the healthcare providers aren't unknowingly transmitting the virus?
So we monitor everybody for symptoms. I think that that's a very good question. And very quickly, I think the CDC is making a discussion today about whether to basically mandate universal masks for everybody, meaning the particulate masks, not the N95. We'll know more on that as the day progresses.
So you made some changes at the elder care facility already.
So at our at the Chiniac Bay Elder House, like they're doing in Anchorage for the long-term care type of facilities, they're actually having those providers go to a universal mask, which is a particulate mask. It's a standard surgical mask that they will wear whenever they're in contact with patients or their clients, residents.
And even more than that, the Elder House has really stepped up and said, hey, if you don't need to actually lay hands on the patient, we're going to have our nurses here do the exam for you, and we'll have you on video teleconference talking to the patient, just to remove more and more people from the Elder House to protect a very vulnerable population.
We talked kind of briefly last week about masks, and the conversation has really sort of elevated throughout the country about masks, and we have probably dozens of questions that have been submitted about, well, Dr. Smith, you even brought some in of these decorative masks that people are making, and there's so much conflicting information out there about masks. Can you guys address that?
So I think the first thing is we have to go back to the types of mask, and everybody's heard about the N95 mask, which is a much higher filtration mask. Those were developed for tuberculosis transmission, and those are a very effective mask to protect a healthcare provider. But for those to be effective, they have to be fit tested. You can't just go out and put one on and assume that naively you're being protected from getting the virus without some proper fitting. And so I don't want people to go, oh, this N95, that's the answer to everything, and then forego social distancing, think they're protected because they have this, quote, high technology mask on that may not be fitted. And they have also taken that out of the supply chain for those frontline healthcare providers. So that N95 mask is a very effective mask if it's worn properly. And then you move to the particulate mask, this kind of standard surgical mask that we see people wearing, or the blue cone mask. And those are effective for large droplet prevention. And then the community's talking about, you know, can we make fabric masks? Those fabric masks aren't a great barrier mask, but they're better than nothing for the general population. So if somebody wants to feel like they're doing something, they can make a mask and wear it. I would rather walk into Safeway or Walmart and see everybody with a cloth mask on. At least it keeps those big particles from moving fast.
The big thing with the cloth mask, too, is it's not necessarily going to protect the wearer.
Exactly.
It's going to protect the people around you. You may be an asymptomatic carrier, or if you have any symptoms, you should be wearing a mask in public. And so you're really protecting your neighbors more than yourself with the cloth mask, and they are effective for that. Like you said, the large particulates are going to get trapped in those cloth masks.
But you still have to practice the social distancing, keeping 6 feet apart, staying away from groups. So it doesn't, just because you're wearing a mask, I don't want people to go, oh, I'm safe, I can go get together with somebody. That's a fallacy that we have to make sure people realize. It's just one more step in trying to keep people apart and prevent the spread.
For the most part, I mean, there's a shortage of those fancy masks in the first place. The general population's not going to have access to them. So if somebody was looking to wear one, is there a particular type that's better? You know, there's all kinds of information about, you know, do you use tight cotton? Do you use loose cotton? Do you, you know, what would work? because I remember when you talked about this last week, you said, you know, really the problem is this might actually backfire, and it would work to trap this stuff, and it would be worse for you to have it on than not. But there must be a kind that would provide the user a little bit more protection. No?
So I don't know about materials and such. I imagine the thicker, unfortunately, you're kind of trading off good filtration. If you put on one of these N95 masks, it's not comfortable. It's you're kind of trapping a lot of air, and you're trying to breathe through a pretty dense surface. And so, frankly, probably the best filtration is some of the thicker, denser materials, which makes it less and less comfortable to wear. And there comes a point where there's diminishing returns to getting a thick piece of material. I don't know particularly if they're going to make their own masks, what would be best. Really, it is truly the barrier that catches the large particulates that's protecting others around you.
And if you're making your own mask, cloth mask, the advantage is you can wash those. Have
right.
a couple and wash them, and you know. Well, but you still need to keep your. We can't overemphasize the social distancing.
Do you lose the effectiveness of a mask? I mean, I hear a lot of things about in places where there's already virus and there's shortages that they're reusing medical supplies.
So currently, the recommendation on both the particulate and N95 mask are that they can be. The same provider can use those on the same patient for up to a week. And we, you know, you put them in a paper bag. The idea being that plastic keeps moisture entrapped. And moisture is even alluded to is if things are wet, it's a better, you can't clean them as well.
What efforts have been made to get more ventilators here in Kodiak to treat critically ill patients before they can be flown to Anchorage?
Well, let's talk about the ventilators for a minute. So, a ventilator patient is going to be a very highly complex patient to care for, and I'll let Gina and Dr. Smith jump in here, but. Basically, we have done a very careful analysis, and we know that with the resources that we have, with the medications that we have, we can take care of two long-term patients on a ventilator and have two patients on ventilators, two others that are awaiting transfer, so a total of four. So that is, again, after very careful analysis of what we can safely provide at this point.
I think the reality is, though, if more ventilators are needed, we're going to make it work one way or another. This is a community hospital. The physicians, the administration are going to work together. If we have to start splitting ventilators, we'll do what needs to be done, but that's not ideal.
Absolutely. And those are resources we can also request from the state, but literally two critical patients does overwhelm our resources. Even when we have traumas, we see it when we have, you know, when we've had other events in the community. So that's why we're really pleading to the public to social isolate, please, please, please. And good hand hygiene, stay away from others, clean your surfaces, and let's get through this. So our hope is that it doesn't come to the community where we have critically ill patients. And like Dr. Jones said, we'll do what we need to take care of patients. But just know that it will put a stressor on our healthcare infrastructure. And that's why we're working on the alternate care site too, as well.
This is a lengthy question. I'll try and condense it a bit. Isn't it likely by the time the COVID virus directly impacts Kodiak, Providence resources and other places will already be unavailable because of similar outbreaks throughout the state and Washington, with the predictions that are being made now? In regards to population being would need to be hospitalized, are we adequately prepared for what likely would be coming soon?
So one of the things that's occurring in Anchorage is all elective surgeries are being put on hold. The hospital is being cleared so that they can accommodate more patients. Absolutely true that sometimes even in the middle, when nothing special is going on, the hospital beds are full in Anchorage. They are doing steps in Anchorage to make sure the hospital beds are not full of elective surgeries and things that can be put off for a while. And so, and there are more ventilators being brought in. ANMC has brought in, they had a total of 50 ventilators before. They brought in another 200 ventilators so that they could more effectively treat the population. And this is not, you know, it is a native hospital, but when in times of need, people will step up and they will step forward and help out. Providence has, you know, we'd love to get some of our patients up there who need some procedures done. They're denying referrals up there so that those beds are not full of people who have a right knee getting an artificial knee put in and things like that. We're putting off a lot of procedures for a while, so beds are not as full in Anchorage. Is it possible we could become overwhelmed? It is, but that just means we're going to work a little harder.
Absolutely, and we've canceled all of our elective procedures as well, and the only patients that we're seeing in our outpatient clinics are those that would have bad outcomes if we didn't take care of them. So we've done that here locally as well to keep our beds freed up.
I don't even know the answer to this question. Is there capacity in the state other than Anchorage and small capacity other ways? Does Fairbanks have considerable capacity? Or is everybody in the state going to wind up either in Seattle or in Anchorage?
I don't know the answer in Fairbanks, yeah, to be honest. This is awful, but it's outside the Providence system, and so we kind of lose track of Fairbanks a little bit. They're a bit on their own up there.
Yeah. And we know that Fairbanks is already experiencing several cases.
Right.
So I think part of your question is, if we're overwhelmed in Alaska, are we going to be able to send them to Seattle? Probably not.
No, I'm saying Anchorage has, the way I'm looking at it, if you're in Cordova or in Dillingham, all these communities are going to be wind up sending all their patients to Anchorage, right?
Exactly, and that's what our plan is too. And so we have to look. So right now, Anchorage hospitals, all three hospitals there, ANMC, Providence, and Regional, have capacity to handle a lot of critical patients, and we hope that if we can keep our end of the chain flatter, and so we have less critical patients at any one time, that they can, their capacity doesn't get overwhelmed.
So I'm assuming that by hearing that the Alaska Airlines Center had been turned into a thing, that's kind of a bigger model than what we're doing at North Star, right? Is that kind of thing happening throughout the state?
Right now, they're planning 150 beds. We're planning 200. So we might be stretching it, but we're going to do it. And so that's what they're working on. And I think their facility will be up and running. I think I heard last night it will be 2 weeks. Yeah. And they'll be ready to take patients at their alternate care site.
It was recently announced that a cluster of outbreaks in Fairbanks was centered around a health clinic and PT clinic. What measures are being taken locally to reduce changes of such asymptomatic transmission occurring at outpatient services here?
So, like I just mentioned for us, and Dr. Jones mentioned earlier here on the show, that we've reduced all of the only outpatients that we're seeing are people who will have poor outcomes if we don't treat them. And we're using telehealth and several other methods as well.
So last week I had 15 patients on my list. I only actually saw two of them. The other 13 were by telephone. If you're good at taking history, a physical isn't always necessary. If you're managing chronic issues, you don't necessarily have to see them. And so we can narrow down and treat patients by phone a lot of the time. What does that mean? We don't get reimbursed. it's a small percentage of reimbursement if we saw them in person, but it takes at least as much time. It's just the way our system is set up, but it's what's best for the patients.
We also have a great resource in Providence Express Care Virtual. It's a way to see a provider through your device, your iPad, your phone, and it's for pretty simple things. So if you need a refill on a prescription, if you've got, you know, sore throat, pretty easily diagnosable and easily treated things through that type of a platform. So that's a great way that...
These are people who already have a doctor, or is this for somebody that just has...
So anybody can go and get an appointment through Express Care Virtual. If you Google it, you'll see a link of how you can get an appointment. And that's a way, just as I said, to get... to get some FaceTime with the doctor if it's for something pretty minor.
Any comments about preventative measures being proposed for processing plants?
I would have to leave that to the Emergency Services Council. I know that they're working with the plants on employees coming in, fishing, because fishing has been in that, from the state mandate, considered a critical service. And so I know that the Emergency Service Council is working with the processors on that issue, and I would have to defer that. One of the things I'd like to comment on to reassure the public is we're doing everything to not overwhelm our hospital, but we do have two operating rooms that we are fully staffing and keeping open. So for any emergency surgeries, we can provide that. If a patient is laboring, as Dr. Jones indicated, we've asked both of the clinics that admit patients to the hospital to have two physicians, one who takes care of potentially infected patients and the other physician to take care of non-infected, both in labor and delivery or on the medical floor. On the labor and delivery side, we actually have a dedicated room 23 now, which provides full negative pressure for a mother who would be in labor who would meet the criteria for being a COVID patient. So we can separate that person, and we'll have a dedicated staff, dedicated physician just for that individual, and not expose our other laboring patients. Because I think we have 14 or 15 projected deliveries coming up in April.
Whoa.
Yeah, so we're working extremely hard to keep our inpatients safe.
Got a question about people arriving, particularly people arriving for fishing. How do we keep the community safe?
If they're following the rules, they need to self-isolate for 14 days. It's a tough thing to ask people to do, and it's very inconvenient. It's the way it is right now if we want to keep the community safe. If people are coming in to work on boats, they need to find a place to hunker down for 14 days and make sure that if they need to stay on the boat, as long as you're not exposing the rest of the people who are going to be going into the community, we need people to hunker down when they come in. Otherwise, it is going to get brought into the community and start spreading quickly. Like I said, it may have already been brought into the community, but somebody may have done the right thing and hunkered down. And that's what we're asking everybody to do who comes into this community.
The Policing Act, that's why I asked you originally, are you seeing people complying? What should we as a community do if people aren't complying?
I think we should always remind people, hey, keep your distance. I mean, be cognizant of other people, but you have to do it in a polite way. And a lot of people go, oh, thank you. I mean, I think if you very politely say, hey, you know what? There's a mark on the floor at the Safeway grocery line. Could you stand behind that? Most people go, oh, thanks for reminding me. And that's, you have to do it in a polite manner, and the majority of people will go, oh, thank you, I didn't think about that. And we're all, we need reminding.
Well, you guys are hypersensitive. You're aware. you know good practice. You know how to deal with things like this, or at least to conduct your normal life, where for most of us, we haven't got a clue. You know, we're sort of learning as we go. How do you safely go to the grocery store?
I actually preach this to a lot of my patients. I said it last time I was on. I hate to say it, but I touch my face all the time. It's just a habit. I rub my eyes. It's just the way it is. When I enter that grocery store, I spend mental energy to not touch my face at all. I clean the cart when I go in, the handles, the immediate area around where you'd handle the cart. I go through the store. When I leave, I spend mental energy until I can wash with soap and water and clean those up. Alcohol works pretty well too. Soap and water actually works really well on this virus. It's, you know, we don't always say that, but this virus responds very well to soap and water. And so spending the mental energy just to not do that. I have people asking me, what do I do with all these groceries that have been touched by other people or potentially sneezed on? We probably, a lot of us have read the studies of, oh, it can live on this surface for 24 hours. It can live on this surface for, it can be detected. Be careful when you read these. It can be detected on this surface for even 3 days. We are really good at detecting things, but it takes a viral load to get infected with it. A single virus is not going to infect you. It takes a viral load, a droplet going into you to really infect you. If you want to be super safe with your older folks, if you're shopping for others, literally if they just left the groceries on the counter or in a cool area for 12 hours, as long as it doesn't need to be frozen, obviously, if they left them for 12 hours, virtually all the virus on those groceries will be dead. And the chance of getting anything from those groceries, even if somebody opened your bag and sneezed on it who had COVID, is almost zero. It is very difficult to transmit if you just leave it sit for 12 hours. Is it necessary? Probably not. If you want to be super safe, you could do that. And it's not going to hurt anything if the cans sit there for 12 hours.
This is a scenario where parents come back to the island from Mexico and do a 14-day quarantine. Then a couple weeks later, their two children come back from off island and stay in the parents' home, quarantine for 14 days. Will the parents need to also do the 14-day quarantine again? Is there any possible scenario where they could shelter in the parents' home and not transmit the virus, or would the kids need to go shelter somewhere else?
The recommendation is separate bathroom, keeping social distancing even within the house, and potentially having people wear masks within the house if they really want to not transmit it. It's a tough thing to do when you're dealing with family, though. But having, if you have two bathrooms, one bathroom's our bathroom and one's for the people who just came in, is not a bad strategy to have. People who just came in can stay out of the kitchen, and whoever is there already can cook for them and bring them food. It's just one way of cutting down on transmission.
Would you let someone in your house now to clean the house?
I don't think we're supposed to, are we? Have to go back to clean it on our own? It's rough.
No comment.
Well, what about the plumber? You know, I mean, it's an essential service, but would you, if you needed repairs right now, would you have somebody come in your home and do repairs?
I think that if you needed the plumber to come in and do repairs, absolutely, but you still practice social distancing. So you probably, and plumbers don't like you looking over their shoulder anyway.
And how are you going to wash your hands without the plumber?
Exactly. So then once it's repaired, then you clean those surfaces. And soap and water is a good cleaning, surface cleaner. So
just today I had internet. I ordered internet for an apartment I have. And they said, we're going to drop the stuff off at your front door, but we're not going to come in and hook it up. Call us on the phone if you have trouble hooking it up. But we're not going to come in your house. And so there's a lot of things like that we can do ourselves. But like you said, the plumber, the electrician, things like that, sometimes they have to come in.
Yeah. If you had to get on a plane for now, for work, for something, how would you prepare yourself to get on a plane now?
I'd fly my own plane.
Would you? Well, do you take passengers?
I think it would be a little unhealthy for me to fly my own airplane since I don't fly. So I would take the stance that, you know, you see those crazy moms who get on the plane and clean every surface when before they put their kid in there. They're not looking so crazy anymore.
So I'm that crazy mom who wipes down the seat, wipes down my husband's seat. And totally.
So the airlines are trying to do a much better job cleaning between flights, but I think it would be good to have some wipes that you wipe down all the surfaces with. And the biggest thing to me is washing your using alcohol rub on your hands every 30 minutes when you're on an airplane. Do you need to wear a mask? It's up to you. It might be helpful. It would be nice to the people around you, because what if you're one of the asymptomatic carriers? It would be in a confined space like that. I think it would be a kindness just to wear a mask, not necessarily for yourself, but for everyone around you.
So I might point out that the airlines actually for air filtration they're one of the better organizations. That air that's in that air, once you get on the airplane, that air is circulated through a filter system.
Okay.
They're way ahead of that curve. So, but it's getting onto the airplane. It's, you know, standing in line at TSA, keep your distance. You know, waiting at the checkout counter, keep your distance. Wash your hands. Wash your hands. Wash your hands.
We are out of time. Thanks for your time today. We'll be back at this again tomorrow. With Dr. Smith, you're going to be here again tomorrow. So tune in. We will be back. Have a nice day. Stay safe.